All right, quieten down now. Live from the Brit and Yankee Pub Studios, it's those two fat guys, Phil and Mark, with another Brit and Yankee craft beer pubcast. I can hear the pints being pulled right now.
Knock the wild dude, bring the drums in, let's have a party. Pump up the bitter. Shh, test it. Pump up the bitter. Up the bitter.
Take it away, lads.
Pump up the bitter.
You are paying for that beer, aren't you?
This is Pubcast 264. I've headed north on a somewhat damp day. In the middle of the week here in Chicago, we had extreme storms coming through. We had thunderstorm after thunderstorm, and it was clouds and everything happening. And up north, they got hit particularly badly. And in fact, we're at a brewery right now where they did get a slight amount of water coming in. Unfortunately, none they could use for brewing.
Yes, we're it's now at Lake Mundelein.
Oh, Lake. And that you heard the voice of Bruce Durr, the director here of brewing up at Tighthead. We're up in Mundelein, Illinois. And the Brit and Yankee has long been threatening, I guess, to Bruce that we're going to come back and record another show because. Way back, I think it was probably about a year after you opened, and the Yankee was actually still around.
Yes.
We headed up here. You guys were really in your infancy.
Yeah.
And we had, what should we call it, technical difficulties where we came out on one channel and Bruce came out like in the distance, so you couldn't really hear it. So
I'm usually pretty far out there, but that was pretty literal.
So this time around, I've cured that problem because I like to record in mono now, so every sound should come out the same. It should be a lot easier.
Very
Bruce,
nice.
Welcome to the show. Thanks a
Thank
lot.
You.
For It's been a busy day for you here today, hasn't it?
It has.
Of mopping and...
mopping and sucking up water in the tap room, yes.
So I understand, you did have some water come in here from all these storms.
Yeah. We had about an inch in the tap room. We have our patio that drains... Just couldn't keep up with the rain as fast as it came, so it comes right in through the front door.
And the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah,
but as
exactly.
I walked in here, and I drove up from the south, I saw a little bit of flooding, but nothing compared to the tales that you were telling. And when I walked in the door, I couldn't have known there was any water in here.
No, it stays pretty contained. So,
and I'd just like to assure everybody that the beer is okay.
Yes,
no beer was
harmed.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
It's all good.
So, Bruce, it's been, what, 5-6 years now?
Yep, 5.5. We started brewing in September of 11, so it'll be 6 years in September.
6 years coming up.
Yep.
And as I say, I think the craft beer population has boomed since that time, so we've got to put you into the middle tier of brewers. You're not a newbie anymore.
No.
You're not one of the seniors like Lagunitas or Two Brothers or people like that, although Lagunitas isn't a local Illinois brewery.
Yeah, exactly.
But you are well established. Your tap room
we were on the front edge of it for sure. So
you were. And how did tell us for the people who don't know the history of Tighthead? How did that all come about?
Really, just out of me being a home brewer for about 20 years and wanting to do something with it. At a time when the market was not doing real well, businesses were laying people off. I found myself without a job, and my wife and I decided it was time to do what I loved and take my hobby and my passion to a business. So.
And the rest is history, as I say, because as I
exactly.
sit here, we're sitting in the tap room, and you have got, let me see, probably what? 12, 13 brews on tap at the moment?
Yeah, usually we have up to 16. We do try to keep a lot of beers on tap. As a production brewery in Illinois, we can only do beer made on premise, so we like to give people a nice selection.
Yeah, you have got all your tappers, but you've actually gone into cans. I think you've got your own canning line?
We do. We have a 12-head rotary fill Palmer canning line. We've had that since I guess it's been about a year ago, April, already. So first 3 years, 3.5 years, we were draft only. Okay. So we did some bombers in the interim. We always knew we wanted to get to Cannes. It was just a matter of coming up with the capital and the capacity to do it. So Cannes have been going great. We do 16-ounce four-packs. We have a number of beers that we put out year-round, so are always available. The Irie IPA, Chili Water Pale Ale, Scarlet Fire, Red Ale. And we're about to release Bear's Choice IPA, which has been in the market for a couple of years, but we haven't put it in package yet. So
how does that differ, the Bear's Choice from the Irie? Because I remember having the Irie IPA, and I think for those who don't know the story behind it, I think that's your brewer, Billy Oakes. He's still with you,
Billy,
right?
Billy is our head brewer. He's responsible for all the beer. I give him full credit on quality and everything, the recipe formulation anymore. So,
and that was his dog, if I remember.
He does have a dog named Irie. He also has a dog named Chili.
Oh, he does? Okay, so, well, there you go.
He's got two beers. And ironically enough, Bear's Choice is named after his wife. So her
name
parents
is Bear?
Used to call her Bear when she was little as a nickname. When she was pregnant and not drinking, she loved IPAs. And she always gave him a hard time because he named two of his beers after their dogs.
Oh.
So he designed Bear's Choice to be ready when she gave birth so that she could drink this beer made for her.
Sure.
So, and it's a great beer. It's a Mosaic IPA.
Okay.
It's got a little Amarillo on the front end, but big Mosaic IPA. How does it differ from Irie, I think, was actually the question.
Different hops.
Yeah, different hops. Irie's more of a traditional West Coast IPA.
Okay.
It's bigger than most. It's about 7.8, so it's borderline double IPA. So it's going to be a lot more of that piney, big Northwest hop, where, you know, Bear's Choice or the Mosaic, it's more of that soft fruit.
Right.
It's not as big. It's about 6.5%, so it's more standard IPA. It's just a really nice beer, so...
Yeah, and I remember that when you first brought out the cans, I was very happy because, you know, I live down south. Coming up north is quite a journey, but it's definitely well worth it. And by the way, folks, the Britain Yankee Brew Bus is coming to Tighthead this year. We have a full bus, I'm glad to say.
Excellent.
We'll talk about that later.
Yes.
Yeah. But Irie was one
sure
of the
first.
Should
I get a date for that?
Oh, yeah, we got a date. Yeah. You want a date? Okay.
No,
really, wife mine? Okay.
Sometimes.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Irie was my choice for buying when you first brought out cans, which I think was, a couple of years ago or so?
Cans came out in April last year, April 15, I guess it is, 16.
And it was nice to have them because I treat Irie as a nice IPA that I want to enjoy a good beer with. You know, one that's not too heavy, you know, nothing lighter, just something I can pour into a glass, sit down, watch a little TV, and sip away on and enjoy. So,
yeah,
I would recommend Irie all the way down the line.
I have to agree. It's very nice having around the house as well. Not that I didn't have it anyway, but...
Yeah, right. I'm glad you say you drink your own beer, right?
Usually I tell people I drink wine at home, but...
Oh, really? Okay.
That doesn't go over well on tours. No, it's great. The package is really, you know, it's given us more visibility in the market.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's grown the brand. We're getting more visitors at the tap room. More people know about us. So when you're draft only, you know, you can get into a lot of restaurants and bars,
right.
But it's hit or miss. People even know what they're getting off the menu or see a logo or anything. So being on the shelves has really helped visibility for the brands. So.
Talking of artwork, you talked about your logo. I know that now in your tap room here, you have a absolutely wonderful collection of artwork, which appears to be your labels.
Yeah.
Who's doing that?
Those are being done by Katie Kick is her name. So she did our logo, all of our website information. She's put together all of our labels, most of our artwork since day one. So. Very talented girl, a good friend of ours. Her husband is actually our sales rep for the brewery.
Okay.
He's our brewery rep, so A lot of people out there probably know Travis. He's out there sampling and meeting you guys out there.
All right.
At the bars, restaurants, and liquor stores. So, but she's very talented. She's worked for some pretty big promotional and art companies as a designer, some advertising agencies. So she does a great job with it. I give her concepts, ideas. She takes it and just blows it away, really.
Rugby ball, and for those again who don't know about how the name Tighthead came around, just replay that story.
Yeah, so I played rugby for about 13 years, and I was a tighthead prop, which is a position in rugby. So that's really
interesting. I have to say right now, coming from the UK, I know nothing about rugby other than I know there's two types, rugby union and rugby league. Other than that, all these positions, there's too many players on the field. It gets too confusing.
Well, if you know what a scrum is, it's the front row of a scrum. Yeah. So it's the right-hand side of the scrum. There's two props, a loose head and a tight head. I played tight head. So, yeah, there's a...
And the jokes go on.
I joke that I probably missed marketing 101 in college because, you know, we don't tie anything back to tighthead or rugby, really. The brands kind of have their own names, their own identities. So they tend to be more music related because that's what we like. So, but it lends itself to a great logo, a little story, and... yeah, it means something to me. So, as a sole owner, it's
what the hell, man!
I'm the only one that matters, right?
Yeah, it's my brewery. I'll do what I want. Yeah.
That's right.
So, yeah, though I think anybody who comes up here should admire those pictures because I think they really are works of art, and I'm sure you're putting them onto t-shirts and doing the whole merchandising.
We got
right?
t-shirts up here. Yeah, we're trying to put it on as much as we can these days. So.
You said about music playing part in naming some of your beers. Now I am here drinking a sample of your Boxcar Porter, and it just reminded me of Boxcar Willie. Is that behind
nope.
it?
Oh, that's damn. One of them that doesn't. That's it's usually whoever's recipes usually get to name beers, but that's kind of how we go about doing things. But we're right at the train track, so we're right at the metro station in Mundelein, and it's a limited commuter line, and it's mostly freight, so especially on weekends, you can see boxcars and trains parked about 100 feet from the brewery pretty much nonstop throughout the weekends and most weekdays, so it made sense and lent itself again to a good name.
And just to let people know, it's a very robust porter, 5.6%, deliciously roasty. And at the end of it, when you kind of inhale, you get that, I wouldn't say it's a metallic finish, but there's something in there that kind of goes, oh, I know that finish. And it's just so good because it lasts. It lasts forever, that finish.
I'm not sure what that, it could be, we use a couple chocolate malts.
Okay.
Which helped kind of drag that that mouthfeel out a little bit, I think, and a little more sweetness. But it's fairly well hopped, too. So, it's not a big, malty, sweet beer by any means.
No, I would agree.
Again, a little more hop forward than a lot of porters, I believe.
I definitely just like the style because it borders on the stout line, but on the other hand, it's completely different once you have a stout.
Yeah.
If you have them side by side, you know.
Yep.
But people look at it because a lot of people will drink with their eyes initially, and I say, "Oh, I don't like those heavy beers." But this is not a heavy beer. This is quite light, and this again would be. Do you put this in cans?
We do not right now. We do some bombers. We don't really even send bombers out in the market much anymore, but we do have them. We try to keep them around the brewery for sales. But no, mostly draft right now. It's not to say we won't.
Right.
Most of the issue was space with us.
Okay.
So being able to store cans.
Yeah.
So, we got to work on some of that. But that's really the biggest challenge for the porter.
Yeah, you're in a space that is, well, I mean, how big is this? Do you know the square footage?
Our square footage is about 10,000 okay. square feet.
Are you ever going to expand out? Because I know there's a lot of brewers who found success, and I think, you know...
We'd love
you
to.
You obviously have, because you're still here.
Yeah, you know. No, it's you know, we're making good beer. We've got a good reputation in the market. The cans have really helped grow that. So we are growing geographically as well. We're distributing throughout Illinois. We went into Wisconsin in December.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And it's been really well received, so... we are looking at options right now. So we really like to get to a 30-barrel system. Right now we're a 15-barrel brew house. Wow. We have a lot of 30-barrel fermenters, but okay. at some point, just you know, efficiencies would be nice to have a 30-barrel. So that's what we're looking to do. There's a few options on the table. The building itself is quite large that we're in. We have a fraction of it. But part of the issue is we would need to go up and remove ceilings and fun things like that. So
construction issues,
but
permits.
We'd rather stay where we're at, too, than move production off-site. So that's what we're weighing, but that will happen. So.
And you have a very large parking lot, which I know you do a lot of festivals in. I mean, I don't know if it's all your parking lot, but certainly that's where people will park.
Yeah.
You do a lot of festivals here. You're the key sponsor, I think, for the Mundelein Festival.
Yeah,
as you're the only brewer in town.
No, yeah, exactly. I talked him into doing one 6 years ago.
Okay.
Before you know, every neighborhood had one. I think so. And at the time, coming from the homebrew side, and I went to a lot of festivals just as a beer geek and beer lover. And I liked being able to talk to people from the brewery and talk about the beers because that's what I wanted to be there for. So we did a good job of treating brewers well, and we get a good representation from the brewery instead of just maybe a distro rep or, you know, somebody coming out to sample bottles and stuff.
Right.
So, it is good. We usually have good music. And
You play guitar, right?
No.
Oh.
Well...
Where did I get that info?
I can play
guitar.
I'm
a research
person. I don't.
Oh.
No, we're lucky enough to be very good friends with a blues band that plays here quite often.
Okay.
And I do play blues harmonica, or I used to play more, but they let me come up and play.
There's nothing like blues and beer.
That's right.
That's a great combination.
Right. Exactly.
And speaking of beer, I'm drinking something that... I suddenly spotted on your list up there that was called...
I'm drinking Powerful Pills.
What are you drinking?
Oh, yeah.
Powerful Pills. Okay. So let's see which one we've got going on here. So you've got Powerful Pills now. Powerful Pills, right? Tell us about Powerful Pills, because you're just about to release that?
We just did release it. So we do it every summer. It's kind of our summer seasonal. We'll do it one time. When it's gone, it's gone. Pretty traditional Czech style Pilsner, Pilsner or Kell style yeast. We use Polaris hops, which is a fairly new German hop, not real new, but last few years. And it's just a little more minty, not quite as floral or as the Saaz, but still gives you that kind of crisp finish, just with a little more of a minty hint.
I tasted it and I found that with a lot of dry hop beers, whether it's pills or whatever, you tend to get a rather overly bitter finish.
Yeah.
With this one, it's nice and smooth. You know, you're getting something that's added to, you know, a Pilsner.
Yeah.
Very easy drinking. Quite delicious. What are we looking at? 6%? That's quite high for a Pilsner.
6%. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's up in the Pilsner Urquell area.
Yeah.
Well. Which
it's
is all right.
Not bad company to be in.
Bad company at all. I would agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And on my side, I got a sample, and I said I saw it on your list up there. It's called Tube. Now, I'm assuming that is, because it's an English bitter, it's named after the London Tube.
You got it.
All right. I'm glad I got that. Otherwise, I would have failed my English exam.
Billy really does a great job with English beers. And every last, probably every year and a half, we tend to get an English yeast and do tube. And we used to do painted brown, which is a mild, which is also around 3.5, 3.4.
Wait a minute, it didn't have peanut in it, did it?
No.
Oh, good.
No, it was just a nice malty brown.
Oh, yeah.
Mild, I guess, but it was real clean, and at 3.2, it's pretty spot on. But
and this is 3.2. Yeah, 3.2. Is that like?
Yeah, it's just traditional. Yeah. You know, we wanted to make English session beers, basically.
This is, or as we call them, when I was growing up, we'd have a session. We never called them session beers. I'm just going in for a few pints. Oh, yeah. We had been doing all at a session with a few pints,
Exactly.
But yeah, I tasted that. It's a deliciously malt forward beer.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of it, it's got a very dry finish. Did you use English ingredients?
Yeah, I believe it's typically Maris Otter.
Yep.
And I believe just Golding hops.
Oh.
I believe Golding? Could be Federal.
I asked that is because we brewed with Ken McMullen down at Hotvine, and we did an English pale ale, and that had the two ingredients, Maris Otter and East Kent Goldings. Mm-hmm. This reminded me of that, but I have to say this is very much like an English bitter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have English glasses you could service in, but
we do have imperial pints.
And I know you. You do have imperial pints. Mm-hmm.
So when you order a tube, you would get a.
I know you also have a hand pull. Did you put it on hand pull by any chance? I mean, that would make
We
it
did
tremendous.
At the time we brewed it. God. Again, it's not one that there's a few accounts that know about it, mostly local accounts that have taken a few kegs. But that's when we do things like that. It's pretty much a tap room only kind of release. So we have a lot of regulars. A lot of people like to buy kegs for their homes and parties. They love it. So.
Yeah, this is.
All those expats,
Absolutely. Yeah, there must be a lot of them up north. Yeah. There's a lot down in West Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to, this is internet, so I'm going to say this is fucking tremendous. I just think this is absolutely.
Ah, you didn't tell me I could cuss.
Oh, you can curse anytime you want. Find a place that does a lot of English style beers. I know down at Short Fuse in Schiller Park, he's got a slight English bend. You said that you like brewing the English way. So, what attracts you to that?
For me, I mean, I don't. Yeah, I can't take credit for brewing anything anymore. But
you have slaves who do it, right?
Billy just is a great brewer, and he's got a great recipe design. But I do, I come at it more from a cultural experience. I spent some time in London occasionally, and I just love pub culture. I love the English pub culture and what a hand pull and a pint and a beer engine's all about. So I think that's what intrigues me about it. We do have a hand pump here. We haven't had anything on in a while. Just been kind of behind. We lost a brewer to a different career fairly recently. So.
Okay.
It just takes people, and we're looking to get that person replaced here. So, but we like to do them. People love them when you have them. So,
yeah, and I know on your website you kind of reference the fact that you like the English pub approach,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I've been trying to reproduce in my basement with the Britain Yankee
yep.
pub. Just a friendly place to come and chat. I know that you have, you know, that kind of environment here where you've got people coming in. I mean, what are we, 5 o'clock or so on a Wednesday? You've got people in here chatting. You do have TVs. They're not on.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, it's just talking about matters of the day. Or as we say, talk about anything and everything, you know, and not worry about it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, talk about the beer. That's what
talk
it,
about the beer.
That's what we prefer people do. Or
so you're drinking the powerful pills, but which out of your beers is? Let's narrow you down. Let's have a favorite. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, that's the hardest question I ever get.
So I do see on your list there. You've also got one called double IPA, which I guess is Irie and Irie.
No, I and I is it's similar to Irie. It's another Rastafari kind of term, meaning it's a reference. If in the Rastafari religion, it's when it's I and I is it's symbolic that you're one
with the world,
with Jah, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a little more on that side, but so I and I is. Because Irie being a Jamaican Rasta term as well, we thought that made sense.
Well, hey,
it's a big double. But
now I remember coming in, as I say, probably 3 or 4 years ago, and having a barley wine. And you now have, I think, a couple of these,
it's
or at least one.
It's the same barley wine.
It's the same barley wine.
Well,
the same cask.
Not
it didn't
the same
sell well.
No. Wine.
Okay.
Yeah. So we do. The Old Kaya Dog, that's our, we do it once a year. Typically we have it on, we'll reserve some for draft only, and then usually we put that in barrels. So that gets put in barrels for 9-10 months. So right now we have the barrel-aged Kaya Dog from last year.
And before you actually came out from the back, your wonderful bartender Travis there had given me a sample of that.
Travis?
And although you term it as a bourbon barrel beer or barrel aged beer, I found that the bourbon was very much toned down. The whiskey was more accentuated, but the oak came through absolutely tremendously.
Hmm.
It almost reminded me of a slightly more boozy version of an Innis & Gunn original.
I don't know if I know that beer, but
oh my goodness.
I know.
I've got to bring you up one.
Please do.
Yeah, they're a Scottish brewer who do nothing but beer aged. Well, it's not aged. It's just beer in barrels of a variety. Oak, gin, rum, sherry, etc. And
ours are strictly bourbon barrels. They're a blend of distilleries in this particular version. The first couple of years, at least 3 years, it was always Woodford Reserve. We had a good connection with Woodford. Now we've mixed in some Heaven Hill. I think we have quite a few Buffalo Trace, a few Four Roses. So
okay,
but they're all typically bourbon. So
how do you tone down? I mean, barley wine, that's one of the very oldest styles.
Tone anything down. So. We don't blend it. We never do any blending.
Okay.
It basically comes out of the barrel. We get the barrels wet. There's usually a little residual bourbon in the bottom of the barrel.
Just to get rid of that?
And we put the beer right in on top. No.
You just put it on top of it.
Why would you do that?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not a brewer.
That's all the good stuff.
You guys know how to
does.
Do this
and
shit,
it
not me.
It actually gives you, and it's going to give you that bourbon nose and a little bit in the flavor.
I would.
I'd
recommend
the time will
it.
Bring out the, you know, the vanilla and the oak. So,
one of the, and I'm gonna bring this up because I recently listened to an interview from one of the brewers, the original brewers at Innis & Gunn, and they talked about how, after about a month of putting their beer into a bottle, or into the barrel, the oak flavor went away, and then they had to wait another couple of weeks for the oak flavor to come back. And apparently that's something that happens with wine. Have you ever experienced this? How long do you have it in your barrels?
No, I think the least amount of time we've done is 9 months. So we used to only do the barrel aged barley wine. We started doing a Russian Imperial Stout called Chocolate Malty Balls. So we have that in barrels now for next year. So we're doing a little more barrel aging, but typically we would do it around January and pull it out right before FOBEB, which is, you know, for the festival, and then keep it on for the winter. So it was usually, and that was kind of our time frame, usually 9 to 10 months. This one, we got backed up on brewing schedules, and we did it later than normal, so we left it in quite a while. So it's close to a full year before we pulled it out.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We've never had anything short term. It's very possible, but long term is when you're going to get the most oak and the most time, you know, on.
And I think the difference here is that you're aging it for 9 months, whereas they're aging, or they're putting their beer into oak barrels for only somewhere in the region of 20 to 30 days, and that's all they need to bring out the flavor.
I could see where you're not getting a lot of the oak. You're not getting those vanillas.
Au contraire.
Some of that kind of thing. I'm sure you get them.
I got to bring you up some, Bruce. Next time I come up, I'll bring you one. I got a bottle down there. So let's change topics a little bit. You have been brewing here for obviously 6 years. You've done home brewing. You've seen how the craft brewing environment has changed and boomed, I guess, across Chicagoland.
Crazy.
What pisses you off about it?
What pisses me off about it?
Because there's certain things that piss me off about it.
It's hard to be pissed off when you own a brewery, first of all.
We pissed off at the tax man.
You're so lucky you get to do this for a living. That's the first issue. But, what pisses me off? I don't think anything right now, quite honestly. I think some of the things going on with some of the bigger distribution. We do not self-distribute. We do have that option now. Mm-hmm. When I started the brewery, we didn't have that option. And I went into it distributing. It's not something, it's hard to sell beer. There's a lot of breweries out there.
Right.
And the more that come into the market, the tighter it's going to get and the less handles, you know, so everybody's fighting for the same handles. It doesn't make you mad. It's part of what we all signed up for.
Competition.
So, you know, you make good beer and, you get out there and take care of the brands and the business, and hopefully that pays off. So that's where it'll all shake out eventually.
Yeah.
If people aren't making good beer, you know, eventually it can't support, you know, that many breweries. So.
So when you look,
that's my opinion.
That's great. When you look at the market, it almost seems like you're getting extremely localized brews.
Huh? No, I'm just saying.
I missed that. I didn't get it. Okay. You're almost getting extremely localized beers back to where it was in Chicago, where you had your local tap rooms that used to produce beers back in way back, right?
It is.
And everywhere, you say everywhere has a brewery. I mean, if you have a substantial town of, let's say, 10,000 people, I mean, that's a good population, and it's very, very trendy right now. I say trendy.
It
I
is.
Mean, you know, but and beer I, has been around for thousands and thousands of
and
years.
And that's what I love about it, really. So, and there's the best thing about the growth, in my opinion, is the way that, you know, there's so many different models out there, you know, business models. So, you know, the production side, some people don't have any desire to send it through a distributor or even get it to a restaurant or bar, and that's fine. So you build it that way. You know, if you can support it through a tap room and just have that culture and that feel, that's huge.
Yeah.
And I think that's what is helping. I talk on my tour all the time, you know, every town should have a brewery because that's the way it used to be.
Right.
You know, beer didn't travel well. It still doesn't. So, you know, they would literally roll the barrel down the street to the pub and you'd tap it and that's where you got your beer. So, and, you know, going back to the English pub culture, that it's the extension of the family room. That's where you get the news of the day. Stop in for a pint, you talk to your neighbors, your friends, go home for dinner. You know, and it's, and that's kind of what I see happening. So, which is great.
An integral part of the society, if you will. And obviously you keep up with the news in the UK where the pubs are closing down quite rapidly. Mm-hmm. They are having a craft beer explosion based upon, interestingly enough, what happened over here, which all kicked off from what happened in England with Camera, I think, personally. But
I remember I went to the Great American Beer Fest, or the Great British Beer Fest.
Yeah, right.
The 500 hand pumps. It was amazing. It was my first trip to London, with tagging along with my wife, who had to go for work. And it just happened to be that weekend. So
it was very lucky of you.
I met Michael Jackson at Fuller's at the Arms there, and was able to have lunch with him with a group from the States, and it was very serendipitous, I guess. Serendipitous,
yeah,
is that the right term?
That sounds like an absolutely tremendous time.
Oh yeah,
good Lord.
It was very cool. So I was able to go to that, and that was at a time when Camera was just coming out, because Real Ale was really getting pushed hard, but the big lagers and you know the other drafts coming into the pubs. So in fact, I came home in my homebrew club. I brought back, they had these Camera beer hats that they were doing, kind of like the Burger King paper hat.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And we've got a picture of my whole homebrew club all in these pub hats from Camera, which was kind of cool.
But so now what is happening, as far as I can tell, is that they are starting to brew the different styles that were never around when I was growing up. I mean, I had bitter, I had mild, lager. I mean, that was pretty much it.
Maybe.
And now, they're starting to brew saisons, they're starting to do sour. Mm-hmm. I say starting, I think it's well established. So
yeah, it is. I'm surprised it hasn't grown quicker, but there's definitely a market there for some independent beers, and it's not, you think about it, we're sitting here drinking a Czech Pilsner, we talk about Pilsner Kell, whatever, great German beers. It's like you can make, and Americans are making great Weiss beers, but if you're in Germany, you're drinking, they still make great Weiss beers,
right,
for those styles. I think they're still going to be the best, producers of those styles. But I think it's great to see them branch off and do different things and not have to be doing only these traditional Euro styles.
So if you had a beer that you wanted, that you haven't brewed and you really would like to brew, what would it be?
That's easy.
This is on your wish list, right?
It's an alt beer. I love alt beers. I love Stick. That's one of my favorite beers and always has been. So, but we haven't really gone that direction. Eventually I might get my way, but we'll see. I got to work on Billy to get it into the production schedule.
So does Billy like to brew specific types of beers then?
Not really. We do a lot of seasonals. We do a lot of traditional styles, I think, very well. Mm-hmm. But we definitely lean toward hoppy beers. I think it's kind of our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
We focus and we do hoppy beers really well.
Yeah, I've noticed so far that I haven't had anything that's over-hopped, but has been well-balanced. So
which is,
showcases
which is
the hop.
Key to, to,
I
recipe,
agree.
Design.
How do you survive in America? Come on, everybody wants something pow in your face. What the hell?
Well, Irie is 134 IBUs, so that's in your face. But
I didn't get over 100. My tongue couldn't stand
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Yeah, I did not know that, and I would never have said that was 134, because I would say that that's a really nice brew. Wow.
And you got to come to the brewery to figure out how we do that.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Balance.
A lot of drinking, yeah.
Yeah.
So what's, you know, we're getting down here. I know you've got a little bit of a time constraint coming up. What is in the future?
Yeah,
for
my
you
beer's again? Almost gone.
Oh, okay. Come on, bartender. Could I get a small one of the? I want to try something completely different that I haven't had from you yet, and I haven't had your wit beer. I see a Belgian wit beer on there.
One called
Go-Go Wit. So that would be perfect. A small one of those would be great. In the future, what's in the future for you in terms of just, you know, I note, for example, here you can get growlers, right? I would imagine you can get growlers here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, growlers have been pretty popular.
How about the growlers, the cans?
Just try to continue to grow the brand, you know, as much as possible. Cans are out. You know, I don't think we're... You know, we still have a lot of sales to do to fill, you know, that whole package market. But continuing to do fun beers, come up with fun beers, new beers. You know, just...
have a good time.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's, you know, as an owner of a business, you're obviously trying to grow it and build it forward. So, yeah, it's not at the point now where... You know, I mean, we do well, we're profitable and all that stuff, but you got to think about what you're going to do in your life 10 years from now, 15 years from now.
Retire?
Yeah, to make...
That's what I'm thinking of anyway.
I think I already did that. I did that when I opened a brewery.
No. I want to correct that because most of the brewers I know work nonstop. And what is it, 75% of your work is sanitizing things?
It is.
You know, this is the fun time.
You're basically
where you
a janitor that brews about 20% of the time.
I love that.
That's what
cool.
they say. Yeah. It is though, but you know that's also the key to making good quality clean beer, which keeps you in business. So it's an important part of it, and having good process, good regimen, good people, that's a key. I don't have to be there. I'm rarely here. If you ask my bartenders, they're like,
well,
he's
cool.
never
have a good
here.
Day then.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I come in and do what I need to do, but
you were mopping up today though.
I was mopping this morning.
Yeah, right.
So
this wit beer. Tell us a little bit about it because it's got an extraordinarily decent flavor to it.
My palate's fried. Mm. It is a nice wit. It's one of my favorite beers. So, I've been brewing this for a long time, and it's pretty traditional oats.
Yeah.
You know, 50% wheat basically. We do some rolled oats in it. Probably the most different thing we use, you know, sweet bitter orange peel, which is pretty common, coriander. But chamomile. We throw a little chamomile in the end.
Okay.
It gives it, I think, a little bit more of that floral.
Yes.
So where the coriander can get a little more orange rind kind of orangey.
And that's what I don't. I don't like that orange rind, and I wasn't getting that in this. And I thought, what is it that's toned
and
it down?
And we won't put one in there either.
All right, good
so
man.
Not without, not even if you ask.
It's
I should
like,
say that.
It's kind of like Christmas fruitcake. Okay, don't put orange.
It's a pet peeve
in
of mine. It's like, don't put a fruit in my beer unless I ask for a fruit in my beer.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't see any cherry stouts. What's going on?
See, I said that angrily. And I didn't even cuss.
There you go. This is a great summer beer, this one.
It is. It's our summer seasonal. So it's pretty traditional. You know, I hate to have to try to explain it to people at festivals. I refuse to say, well, you know, it's like a Blue Moon. Because I don't think that's a great example of the style. So I prefer
that.
The Hoegaarden if I'm going to hold myself to a standard.
Well, I was thinking this isn't really like a Hoegaarden because of the slight differences you've put into it. I mean,
the chamomile.
Hoegaarden is really nice, but this is a kind of a nice play on it.
Thank you.
Very, very drinkable. Obviously, we found your pet peeve.
What?
I don't want to describe my beers. Just drink them, okay?
Oh, no. Describing them is great. No, I'm okay with that. So I judged for 12 years, so. You got to be able to describe it. Yeah, okay. It's like, well, there's fruit. And it's like, well, what kind of fruit? What? You tell me what fruit, you know?
For the longest time, I always used to say, if I want fruit in my beer, you know, I'll have it on the side as a salad, right? Because they used to put orange, exactly. A slice of orange.
Yeah,
in,
well,
or
that's
slice
my
of
point.
Lemon in
you
or something.
Get a whipped beer, and it's they automatically put it in there. It's like,
and I never really used to like the fruit actually in that they would put in the fruit. Now that earlier on, I was about to describe a brewery I went to in Cornelius, North Carolina, called Ass Clown Brewing.
I have heard of them.
Well, they do this thing called, this is the longest name I've had, it's a Blueberry Cabernet Imperial Sour Stout. Long name, but it's one of the greatest, you know, with the blueberry in it. It's all well balanced and really good.
How long before it becomes a recognized style?
Oh, it'll never become.
Sorry. That's my other pet
dead.
Peeve.
I'll be dead by then.
Made-up beer styles.
Made-up beer styles. Well, interesting question there. Okay, you bring up a topic.
It's not made-up.
No.
Shouldn't say that.
So people take traditional beer styles, and they will put a twist on it just to try and see if they can do something a little different that turns out to be quite a delicious beer.
Yeah.
You know, would any of your beers qualify for that?
Probably nothing we have on. I think the best one was the first time we went to do a black IPA. Again, in my opinion, at the time we were doing it 3.5 years ago, it's a made-up style. It didn't exist.
Yeah, very
so,
new.
But,
absolutely.
You know, it was all the rage. So we went to do one, and we had a horrible mash. It was one of our worst mash, and we had about an 8-hour runoff. So we didn't sparge a whole lot, meaning we collected higher gravity wort and first wort. So the beer, instead of being 6.5, 6.7 IPA, ended up being about 9%.
Hello.
So we ended up calling it an Imperial Imperial Black Pale Ale. I think that's what we called it, just for fun. And we called it Midnight Shadow. And to this day, that's probably the most asked for beer for us to rebrew. Because there's a lot of, we've done over 65 styles in the 6 years now, and that's the one that people ask for probably the most to come back. And it's like, well, I don't know if we could do it again if we wanted, but was all good.
You talked about brewing an alt beer. I think it was one of the recent beer magazines, the plethora of them that are out there, was talking about brewing Stein beers.
Oh, yeah.
Never thought of that?
No.
You get your rocks off, do you?
Yeah, well.
Oh, thank you.
It's, it reminds me of, and I am struggling to think of the brewer's name, but you're down in that neighborhood when Peyton's Roundhouse.
Oh, right. Two Brothers.
It was
Peyton's Roundhouse
before.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Horrible, I can't think of the brewer's name. But anyway, they had a contraption. They actually rigged a hoist and a cage, and they used to do a Trustein beer into their kettle. And I used to love to see that, because I'd go down there and judge, like, the Drunk Monk and some of the beer competitions. Mm-hmm. And I always loved looking at that brewery for that reason alone. And we had a friend who built special apparatus, and we do hot, you know, we boil with them in a homebrew situation too. So I don't see that happening here. Billy won't let me put anything in beer. No fruit.
He's very traditional. I see there's no sours on your list.
No.
He won't even let that wild yeast get in there.
Well, we both feel strongly about that. Unless you have separate facilities. That's why mess with it. Why invite it in?
Yeah.
We love them. We drink them. Eventually we will. We got barrels back there that we're keeping moist for someday when we would probably barrel sour something before we did it in the brew house. But who knows? That may be something in the future for sure.
Well, Bruce, it's been a tremendous insight sitting here.
Thank you.
Imbibing your
up.
Beverages and learning a little bit more about Tinehead. And hopefully this time we've got a good recording.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
you can come back again. If
oh, thank you so, very much. Yeah. I will actually. Yeah.
Every Wednesday at 4.
Why? What happens at 4?
Oh,
you get flooded? Yeah. Oh no, never mind. Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. I got it. Yeah. I'm a bit slow on that. Sorry. Festivals coming up. You're going to be at Naperville.
All the time. We are going to be at Naperville. This weekend, I think it's Naperville and Lake Villa.
Yep, okay.
Up by us, kind of up northern half of the state. So those should be good. Naperville's always a fun fest. Quite a few breweries, beautiful park.
So I'll miss it this year.
Looking forward to that.
I have a previous engagement, so.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Sorry. Does your wife know about that?
It's with her.
Oh, good.
So. I hope she does.
Other things, we have our, we're releasing Bears, Bears Choice next weekend, the 21st. So that'll be fun. There's a lot of people that really like that beer. So it's got some traction in the market. So it'd be nice to see how that does on the shelves. But yeah, other than that, the normal circuit.
Yeah, right.
Restaurant around Chicago.
Which is heavy.
Great
heavy.
Taste, you know.
Yeah.
Always a fan favorite of ours. So we take the whole team up there, so we have a lot of fun with that one.
And just to make sure we give you your full plug, what's your address, and do you know your telephone number?
It's who uses phones anymore?
Yeah, I know.
We are at 161 North Archer in Mundelein, and our phone number is 847-970-9174. Just find us on tightheadbrewing.com.
So gives you all the details,
everything's there,
and so long as it's not flooded up here, then you're okay, you're open for business.
Check the weather, check with the Coast Guard maybe.
With Cheryl Scott.
Everyone should check with Cheryl Scott before they leave the house. So.
I agree. Bruce, it's been an absolutely tremendous pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Cheers.
And all the best for the future.
Thank you.
We'll see you on August the 19th. Make a note of that.
Excellent. Yep.
I'll write that down on your back or something like that. Here we go. Very good. Thank you, sir. Much obliged.
Yep.
Cheers.
Thank you.
All the best.
Britain Yankee!
Britain Yankee!
I'll have a pint, give us a pint. You got any tetanus?
A pint, please, Bob. Give another pint, please, Bob.